Welcome to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander, the crossroads where culture, lifestyle, and community meet, all hosted by the legendary New York radio TV personality and proud Harlem American, G. Keith Alexander.
And a very pleasant good afternoon to you and to yours. And I want to say welcome to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander, the crossroads where lifestyle, culture, and community meet. Now, wherever you are, I appreciate you for joining our neighborhood as we hang out together in Harlem, America. Today, in the What's Hot spotlight is Felicia Rashad, an accomplished actor and stage director. Two-time Emmy Award-nominated Felicia Rashad became a household name when she portrayed Claire Huxtable on The Cosby Show, a character whose enduring appeal has earned her numerous honors and awards for over two decades. She has appeared as Carol on NBC's This Is Us, and in 2019 and 2020, she was nominated for Emmys. Also, she played Diana Dubois on the popular Fox TV series Empire, and as Dr. Woods Trapp in Terrell Alvin McCraney's Peabody Award winning series, David Makes Man, on the OWN Network. So, with the power vested in me, which is close to nil, it is my distinct honor and pleasure to say that my special guest, Felicia Rashad, is What's Hot. Hello there. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. You know, this technology, I'm still trying to get used to this technology, Felicia. And it is, let's see. Well, I'll just go along with it the way it is.
How is it okay? Is it good?
Oh, yeah. Everything is good. But how are you holding up during this coronavirus downtime?
I've been very fortunate to be well, to mm-hmm. be safe and well. And my family is safe and well. And my friends, most of my friends have been safe and well as well.
Good, so. Good. The I want you to know that preparing for this interview, I was so impressed with your resume and all the accomplishments and the awards. And of course, there was no way for me to know that you had accomplished all these things. So I had to really select a special fragrance for you today in order for me to be able to do this interview, because this is very special. So I put on my Wall Street fragrance today just for you, because looking at you on my Facebook page with your photos, you look so elegant and so sophisticated, and you've got such grace. You remind me of the queen, Cymbeline.
Mm-hmm.
You look like a queen.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you very much.
So let us congratulate you on the fact that you are an AKA, and the AKAs have been in the news lately. And one of your sorority sisters has become Vice President of the United States of America.
Yeah, how about that?
what are your thoughts about that?
I think that's more than special.
She stands on, I guess, your shoulders as well as many other AKAs, and we're so proud of her. I thought that her having such a wonderful accomplishment would be something that young Black women, young Black girls could see themselves and say that one day I can be Vice President, or President for that matter, you know. So
it's very inspiring. It's inspiring for young girls and women the world over. And that's what is most significant to me, is that it's inspiring for women and young girls the world over.
Well, that's
and great. This is not only her accomplishment, it is the accomplishment of the American people, because the American people voted her into office.
I concur.
Yes.
So let us take the Wayback Machine back to where you were born, Houston, Texas. So what is it like having a daughter who's a big star as well?
Well, you know, we don't look at each other like that. She's our mom and she's Phalia, and that's the way it is.
Well, you got to be real proud of her, though.
I'm very proud of her, but I'm proud of her. Certainly, I'm proud of her professional accomplishments. Certainly, I am. Mm-hmm. But what I'm most proud of is her work ethic. And I'm very proud of her personal attributes, characteristics that she has demonstrated since early childhood. Mm. Her empathy for people, her ability to boost someone when their morale is low, mm-hmm. her desire to include people in fun and mm-hmm. whatever is happening. She's always been like that. She's open and friendly and social and generally respectful and kind to people.
Well, that's great. Well, she takes after her mother.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
and for those folks who may not be familiar with your daughter, she stars in Billions.
Yes.
On Showtime.
Yes, her name is Condola Rashad.
Yes, and she plays an attorney.
Yes, kind of like her mother did at one point.
Hmm. Yes.
I hadn't made that connection quite, but it's true.
Following in her mom's footsteps.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, so let's take the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to where you were born, Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And as a little girl, what was life like for you there?
What I remember most is I remember family, of course, and feeling loved, cared for, and well-protected. I remember a community in which I felt the same. I remember very, very blue skies with big clouds that used to take on the shapes of animals, peoples, and things. I remember the smell of cut grass. Mm. I remember a little duck I had once, and I remember a little chicken I had once. I remember trips to the farm where my father was born in Lobdell, Louisiana, mm-hmm. and I remember an extensive road trip, well, it seemed extensive to me at the time because I was quite young, a trip that we took to from Houston to Chester, South Carolina for Christmas in our car. And my brother Tex and my sister Debbie and I were bundled up in the back seat of the Lincoln. My parents were in the front, and it was very, very exciting. And we were making up games as we went along the way. I remember teachers who were in the classroom because that's where they wanted to be, mm-hmm. and who gave us everything they had and who demanded excellence from us because they knew where we lived. And they knew our parents. And so less than that would never have done. I remember not really understanding racism until I learned to read.
Really?
Yeah, because the community was such, you know, so when you read about Tulsa, Oklahoma, before the Tulsa riots, you know, mm-hmm. like at the beginning of the century, you read about that. Beginning of 20th century, you read about that. Houston, Texas, at the time that I was growing up in the community in which I lived, they were all businesses owned by people in the community. There were restaurants, there was theater, cinema. My father shared his office with a physician. My father was a dentist, and there were a number of dentists, African-American dentists. They had their own association. They had a picnic every year, Juneteenth, my birthday, so it was a double feast for me. I went, but in our neighborhood, let's say someone who worked as a housekeeper mm-hmm. would live next door to someone who was a doctor.
Ah, okay.
I didn't feel separate from people because of occupations or economic standing. It's like the community was there. It began to change, certainly, as I was continuing to grow up. But in the schools, I went to public schools. When I was 13, my mother took us to live in Mexico City for a semester.
Now, how did that come about?
Well, my mother, Vivian Ayers, is a poet.
Poet laureate.
Not a poet laureate, a poet.
No? Poet. No,
a poet,
okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
A published poet.
Okay.
From the time I was very young, her first book, Spice of Dawns, is a collection of her poetry. And actually, Langston Hughes featured a selection from that book in mm-hmm. his anthology, Negro Poets. So my mother, Vivian Ayers, is in that anthology.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, how did that come about? Well, my mother was from Chester, South Carolina, which is a mill town. She was educated at Brainerd Institute, which was a Presbyterian school with a classical education. My parents were divorced when I was 6. And my mother continued to live in Houston because she didn't want to separate us from our father, who was very mm-hmm. attentive.
Mm-hmm.
But she was on a different trajectory than most people. She left the women's social groups that she was in because she said all they talked about was washing machines and hysterectomies. And she was interested in poetry and art, So she became something of an oddity because there weren't a lot of people writing poetry in that circle of people, mm-hmm. And her quest was a different quest, and she wasn't enamored with materialism at all, and she wanted to experience something other than racism, because it was the time of legal segregation in this country, and she wanted her children to have a different experience too. She really was the one who kind of guided us in a way that allowed us to move beyond racism as young children, because she constructed all kinds of things to take our attention away from it. She would move all the furniture in the living room back to the sides of the wall and teach us to tumble across the floor. And she'd bring our friends in to teach them too.
Really?
She would go, yeah, she'd bring our friends in from play to teach us choral speech. Hmm. She would, my mother would do all these things. And she would take us to lectures that we couldn't possibly understand because of our age and experience. And she knew that, but at least we were there and we were being exposed to other things, to bigger things, to things that would stimulate our intellect and imagination.
That's a wonderful, wonderful experience. We've got less than 30 seconds, so we're going to take a small break, and we'll be back with the wonderful 2-time Emmy-nominated Emmy Award with Felicia Richard in just a few seconds. Thank you.
Harlem. Harlem, America.
It's about Harlem.
Harlem is my town.
Where Chase is advancing Black pathways.
Have you ever thought about hosting your own radio podcast to establish fame, fortune, and followers for your small business? People listen to them, they subscribe to them, and they love them. As a small Black business owner, doesn't that sound like something you'd like to be a part of? Well, you can when you hire the radio podcast pros at Harlem America Digital Network. Imagine, you'll have a team of creative and technical professionals at your disposal and a 1-hour weekly radio podcast to spread the word about your business. Making your business successful with its own media is not for the faint of heart, but it can happen with a Harlem America Radio Podcast talk show. Get a free consultation by emailing gkeithalexander at harlemamerica.com or call D. Daniels at 480-553-5741 today.
You're listening to Harlem America, talking to the world from the heart and soul of New York.
You're listening to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander. To reach our show live today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Also, you can send an email to gkeithalexander@harlemamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
And remember, you can also listen to the podcast or tell your friends to listen to the podcast on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Just subscribe and download us, okay? We're here with Ms. Felicia Rashad. It is my pleasure of being with you. And I just want to ask you, how did you get the job as America's mom as Claire Huxtable?
I auditioned.
Well, I knew you were going to say that, but it had to be more than that. I mean, you know, who are you up against, and how many did you have a call back, or did they say, you know what, she's it?
No, there was an audition process, let's see. I think a lot of actresses were auditioning for this role. Mm-hmm. A lot of actresses in New York were auditioning for this role, but I had some very clear instincts about it. First was that I would not discuss the fact that I was auditioning for this role with anyone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So unless I saw someone in the audition that I knew, no one I knew would know that I was auditioning.
Really?
Yeah, and people whom I saw that I didn't know, well, we didn't know each other, so I mean, fine. But I just had that very clear understanding not to discuss it with anyone. And I didn't until the last. So there was one audition, and then there was a second audition in which I was put on tape and asked to speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then after that audition, I was called to a final audition in Los Angeles the day after Easter Sunday. And it was only after receiving that final callback that I spoke to someone about it, and that someone was my mother, mm-hmm. who was living in Houston, Texas still at the time. And I asked if she could come and be with my son while I went to California to audition. And she did. And I called my sister the morning of the audition. My sister was living in California. She was living in, what's that area? Anyway, I can't remember right now. It's a pretty famous area where a lot of Black people live. So it's a neighborhood. It's a neighborhood.
Baldwin, you know. Hills?
There you go. She was living up in Baldwin Hills.
Okay.
And and I called her to say hello, and she said, "You sound so close." I said, "Well, you know, we are close." See, I didn't even tell her then. I didn't tell her to the end of the day when I had been cast.
I see.
My mother taught me as a young person that when something is very important to you, if you hold it closely, loosely, but closely, you don't dissipate the energy of it.
Hmm.
When you talk about things a lot, especially before they happen, you can dissipate the energy that you need to see it through.
Wow. I never thought about that, but I guess there is some merit to that. Certainly, certainly. So what did you have to give up in order to be where you are today? I mean, is there anything that you had to sacrifice in your life in order to be who you are today?
I had to sacrifice time with my son. There was a period there when I was in Dreamgirls. I look back on that period as the most trying time and
Why?
The most difficult, and because I had to be separated from my son a lot. The way the work was constructed, first I had to go I had to go for an out-of-town run. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was in the Wiz and went for an out-of-town run, my son was very young, and mm-hmm. I brought him with me. Mm-hmm. And also that particular production created a nursery for us, as there were seven mothers with young children. So we brought our children to work, and they played together. Mm-hmm. They had their own big dressing room, and they had a certified kindergarten teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was, I never had to be separated from him. But with Dreamgirls, I was not allowed to bring him to the theater, although he was 8 years old at the time. And he had always come with me everywhere that I worked. And I was an understudy in that show. And usually in a show, you have an understudy rehearsal once a week. In Dreamgirls, there were three understudy rehearsals during the week, which meant that 6 days out of 7 days, well, 5 days out of 7 days, I worked 10 out of 12 hours.
Really?
If you put it all together with the performance of the show, if you put it together with matinee days, mm-hmm. that's a lot of time to be separated from your son who's 8 years old going through this change, because when you enter the third grade, that's the grade where things change and become more difficult, more serious, you know? And so a parent needs to be present. I would get my son off to school in the morning, and when I would see him again, most days, he was asleep in his bed when I got home at night.
Really?
And I hated it. I absolutely hated it, because he was going to a school in which there was, in a lot of families, at least one parent who did nothing but parent. And one day I went to his class for a presentation that he was to give, mm-hmm. a little bit of presentation. And I watched him stumble through that because I hadn't been able to be present to help him to prepare. And as the other children got up to say what they had to say, I watched their mothers mouthing the words as the children were saying it. And I felt so low, I felt low enough to sit on a dime and swing my legs. I felt that I was such a failure. I can't even tell you how that felt, to know that I couldn't be with him. Because when the day came, and the day did come, when I left Dreamgirls without another job to go to, but I left because I had to go.
Wow.
I was home for a number of months before I had another job to go to. And during that time, I would go to the park with him and places with him. And I remember one day being in the park with him and watching the sunlight filter through the trees and squirrels scattering about and children running and playing and the sound of their laughter. And I looked at him, I said, "Has this been going on all the time?" And he looked up at me so sweetly and he said, "Yeah, Mama, it has."
you're bringing tears to my eyes.
But it's horrible. And I can say this. I can tell you, you know, working mothers, working parents, because there are men who parent their sole parenting, and they have to work too. And for parents who, you know, who really enjoy their children and love them so much and want to give them everything, to have to be separated like that because of work, and you have to work because we got to eat. You right. have to have a place to stay. We got to have the lights on, you know. It's a real dilemma for people, and I hope that at some point as a society, maybe we can think about what is done in Sweden and other places to support parents who are single parents and having to work too.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I have a tear coming down my face here from this story. It's a beautiful story. And being a parent is not always easy when you have to do what you have to do, you know, and sometimes we miss some of the beautiful times mm-hmm. with our children, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So some years ago, I got a chance to see you at Lincoln Center in Cymbeline. You played the Queen. and you look like, I mean, you look like Queen material, believe you me. I mean, you're sitting here right now. But also, there are a couple of pictures on my Facebook page and in social media of you. And you have that elegance and that grace. And, I just want to know, do you wear jeans around the house? I mean,
I do.
You do? Oh,
I wear jeans outside. I wear jeans to the grocery store. I wear jeans to the bank. Of course I do.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. You know.
And I'll wear jeans with a silk blouse, a silk shirt. Wear jeans with a very crisp white shirt. I wear jeans.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Because, you know, I've got this image of you, you know.
No jeans. nah.
So, and that's why I'm so dressed up today. I've wore a necktie just for you. Usually when I do my interviews, I just wear either a mock sweater and a jacket or a open collar shirt with a jacket. I even picked out my special fragrance for you today, the Wall Street fragrance. Because this is a special interview. And now I'd like to know about your love affair with August Wilson. Mm. You've directed maybe what, 3, 4, 5 August Wilson productions?
Is it three? I think it's three. Maybe it's more than three.
Well, let's see. Joe Turner's Come and Gone. Jim of the Ocean.
Four.
It's four. And mm-hmm. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
And Fences, yes. It's four.
And Fences, mm-hmm. yes. So how did this love affair begin?
Oh, well, let's see. My introduction to August Wilson was the opening of Fences, the Broadway opening of Fences. And at the time, I was working in television. I trained in theater at Howard University, and theater is the first discipline for me. And when I saw that play, I thought, that's the kind of work I want to do. That's the kind of work I want to do in theater. That. Mm-hmm. But that was eluding me at the time, so a number of years passed, and finally I was called into a meeting with August Wilson, Benjamin Mordecai, his producer, and Marion McClinton, who was directing Gem of the Ocean. It seemed mm-hmm. that Marion McClinton had been watching my work in theater, because even as I worked in television, I continued to work in theater. And for some reason, he thought I would be right for this role. That would be a good choice. So I went into this meeting, and after the meeting, you know, somewhere through the meeting, they asked me if I would read. It was a cold reading because mm-hmm. I hadn't seen the script before.
Oh,
and
okay.
That can happen. And I said, even though I was told by my manager, this is not an audition. You are not to audition. When they asked me if I would read, I said, yeah, of course I'll read. And I read a passage where Aunt Esther is talking about the City of Bones. And then Mr. Wilson said to me after that, he said, I'm not familiar with your work in theater. I just have known you as a television actress. Well, I said to him, you know, at this point in my life, I just don't worry about what people can and cannot see. something like that. And it turned out to be like the kind of thing Aunt Esther would say. Little did I know. I said, so what people see is, I said, well, they see it, they see it. If they don't, they don't. I said, but I'm who I am. And 30 minutes after I left the meeting, I received a call that I'd been cast as Aunt Esther. That was the real beginning, because working through the rehearsal period with him in the room was magic, pure magic. Really? Oh, I one day I thought, this is what, surely, this is what it must have felt like to have Shakespeare in the room while you were working, because he was that kind of playwright. He was an inspired playwright. He wrote what he heard, and he understood the inherent power of rhythm and sound and language, and what it can evoke, and how to use it. And it was all very organic with him, without manipulation. Well, being the daughter of a writer, I had complete respect and absolute appreciation for the work that he was giving us to do, and for him as a person, because I understand the writing process. I understand what it takes to write like that. Then, just a couple of years, a few years after that, I received a call from Constanza Romero, his widow, asking me to direct Jim of the Ocean at Seattle Repertory Theater. That was my first turn as a director.
Interesting. So, all right. So now you've directed three or four of them, as you said, and of course, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. But now, so now Viola Davis is starring in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Mm-hmm. Now, you two split an award once. What award was that?
It was the Dramatists Guild.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've got 2 minutes left. Just tell me, so what do you think of Viola Davis as Ma Rainey?
Viola Davis is, come on. What are we talking about here? Come on. You know, Viola and I also shared the stage in Everybody's Ruby at the Public Theater. So we have somewhat of a, we have a friendship. We have a personal friendship that goes back a number of years. I absolutely love her and adore her. And I don't think that there's anyone quite like her.
You know, I would not think that you would say anything less than that. You know, I mean, that's fantastic to say. We have about a minute left, and I want to let everybody know that you're listening to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander. And my special guest today is the lovely and talented Miss Felicia Rashad. And she's part of our culture. Her body of work has become part of our culture. And we've been sort of looking into her lifestyle. But when we come back, there'll be more conversation. So you stick with me. Don't go away.
The home of Glasso Smart Water is Harlem, America.
Have you ever thought about hosting your own radio podcast to establish fame, fortune, and followers for your small business? People listen to them, they subscribe to them, and they love them. As a small Black business owner, doesn't that sound like something that you'd like to be a part of? Well, you can when you hire the radio podcast pros at Harlem America Digital Network. Imagine, you'll have a team of creative and technical professionals at your disposal and a one-hour weekly radio podcast to spread the word about your business. Making your business successful with its own media is not for the faint at heart, but it can happen with a Harlem America radio podcast talk show. Get a free consultation by emailing gkeithalexander at harlemamerica.com or call ddaniels at 480-553-5555. 5741 today.
You're listening to Harlem America.
I love it a lot.
For entertainment.
Check it out.
Empowerment and health and wellness. Harlem America.
You're listening to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander.
To reach our show live today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Also, you can send an email to gkeithalexander@harlemamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin Brunei. You know, I went to your filmography at IMDb, and you have like 77 credits. I mean, I was really impressed. I've only got like four. I mean, you know, four at IMDb, but you've got 77 credits. I mean, I was really blown away by that. And some of the latest projects were in 2019 and 2020. Let's talk about Jingle Jangle. What it's a Christmas story. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful Christmas story. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I received the offer and the script in, I think it was, I'm trying to remember exactly. I think it was like in March or April of, April of 2019. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I liked the story. It was so endearing. And I especially liked what was happening at the end, because I grew up watching Peter Pan and always wanted to fly. So I said yes. I said yes. And we went over, the cast went over. This was a huge production. This was unbelievable. This is David Talbot's first film. And he and his wife, Lynn, who was a producer, worked so diligently to make this film what it was, what it is. We went over for a reading in the spring. But the production was like, it was so vast, it was so big and so specific and so fine that, unlike a lot of films that I've worked with, with African American writers and cast, and director, where we do the film in 3 weeks, this was a real film, and the production went on for over a year. When you put all of the pre-production in, the construction of set and costumes, the storyboards, the music, the choreography, that continued it, because it's a, when you look at that film, that is a great work of art. It's a great work of art. I was so happy. So then, after I said yes, I'll do this, I received a call from my agent one day, and he said, "Well, I got you out of flying." I said, "Excuse me." He said, "Well, I told them that you wouldn't want to fly." And I said, "Well, why would you do that? Why would you tell them that?" He said, "You want to fly?" I said, "Why do you think I'm doing the film? I'm doing the film so I can fly. Of course I want to fly."
Oh, wow. Gee, you know, that I used to see Mary Martin when I used to watch Peter Pan. As a kid, I watched it at least 5-6 times, and to have her flying through the air. So did they have you on harnesses and
things? The whole thing, and you had to train. Well, first of all, I knew I had to train before going. I said, I have to have very specific training before going. So I worked with a wonderful physical therapist, Taj Zahara, who has worked with the Lakers, who has worked with all kinds of sports figures, who's worked with all kinds of people. And I worked with her specifically to get the body in gear to work with a harness, to what that would be. Little children, oh, honey, they can show up and just do it like that. Nothing for them. But for those children of us who are not so little, you have to prepare. Had to prepare. And that was fun. It was great fun.
You played which character? I invite people to go to my Facebook page and take a look at the photo of you with the two kids. It looks like it was story time. Mm-hmm. And what character did you play?
I was the grandmother.
You were the grandmother.
I was the grandmother.
All right. Okay. And then you also were involved in the animation of Soul. You did a voice. Tell me what that was about.
This is the first time that I have voiced a character in a full-length animated feature. And that is something that I have wanted to do for a long time. You know, I wondered, what would that be like? It was wonderful. It was easeful. It was great. It was good. I didn't work with any of the other cast members in the studio. Mm-hmm. I was always in the studio I was the only artist recording in the studio because people were in different locations. You know, some of us were recording in New York, some were recording in Los Angeles and maybe in other places too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it was exciting and it was great and it was really amazing to see the film. The animation is just unbelievable. And the storyline is so unique. The story is so unique that Kemp Powers, who has written A Night in Miami, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. And that looks like it's going to be a really magnificent film.
It is. Wow. It is. It is. It is.
So, all right, let's go to 1985.
Okay, you're going to have to remind me what that is. I know what 1985
is. Yeah, thank you. I would ask, I had an opportunity back then to, I was at Kiss FM, and you were doing something, you had something going on at that time. So, I interviewed you in reference to what you're doing. And as I'm, sitting there looking at you, I'm saying to myself, boy, she's intelligent. She's beautiful. And this is going through my head while I'm interviewing you. So after the interview was over, I don't know if you remember, the elevator wasn't working. So we had to walk down the stairs. So I, that being a gentleman, I held your hand as we're walking down the stairs because I didn't want you to trip and fall. Unless you fell on me, as I'm going downstairs, I'm saying, now, should I ask her for her number or not? And this went through my head as we're walking down the stairs. So finally, we get downstairs. I ask you for your number, and you very graciously gave me your number, and so I was very happy. And I said to myself, I don't want to act like I'm too excited. So I'll wait a few days and I'll call her and ask her out to dinner. So it happened to be around Thanksgiving. It was a few days before Thanksgiving. So I'm up in upstate New York with my girlfriend and at the time, and I'm driving on this one lane road. I mean, it's one lane, one little lane road, and I'm driving, and the radio was on, and I'm driving, and I'm just a happy camper, just driving, and all of a sudden I hear, we have a special bulletin. Ahmad Rashad just proposed to Felicia Allen on TV. It was, I mean, and I got, it was like, I almost drove the car off the road. It swerved. And the lady asked me, she said, what are you doing? I said, I didn't want to hit that thing in the middle of the road. It just blew me away. What was it like being proposed to on television?
Unusual. It was very unusual. It's not something that... that I would recommend everyone do.
I would imagine that, was there any embarrassment or anything? Because then you came into the studio, I believe, afterwards.
Oh yes, there was the great drama of finding me where I was at Macy's and getting me to the studio to sit in the chair and give the answer. So much drama. I wouldn't suggest that everyone try that, that everyone do that, because, I mean, it was it was exciting and romantic and everything, but truth be told, proposals should be intimate.
I agree, because that one almost wrecked my car.
Well, first of all, we're not going to even get into you. Look at what you just said. I asked her for a phone number. I didn't want to seem too excited. I'll wait 5 days before I ask her to go out to dinner. And then I'm driving up with my girlfriend. I said, okay, see there? I said, oh, God, see,
well,
see.
You know, I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes, well.
It's good to be able to laugh about such things.
Yes.
That's great.
So what do you have coming up now? What are you working on?
There are a couple of, there's Blue at the Apollo. Mm-hmm. We're still looking forward to that when we can go back into theater.
Right.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. I love that play.
Tell us, okay, for our audience who, you know, may be unaware of Blue, tell us a little bit about Blue.
Blue is written by Charles Randolph Wright. Mm-hmm. He has, he's written a couple of things, actually. A few things. He's I've known him since our days together in Dreamgirls. We were in the chorus together. So we have a long-standing friendship, right? But he's also a known and respected director. He's directing a piece. He's in Charlotte right now, and this is a piece for Lifetime. I think he's directing, and he directed a number of episodes of Greenleaf.
I just had Keith David on last week.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I know. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. So Charles wrote this play, Blue, and it's a memory play. It's a play about family. It's a play about identity. It's a play about love, sacrifice, secrets. It's a play about dilemma and surprise and moving forward. This play opened in the year 2000. Yeah, is this a 2000? I think so. First we were at Arena Stage, then we were at the Roundabout Theater in New York. It was great. And then we went to Pasadena Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And then it went to a theater in New Jersey, and Leslie Uggams came in as Peggy. I was Peggy in the original productions.
You were,
and so
okay.
Now I'm directing the play. And Brian Moreland is our producer. And mm-hmm. Nona Hendricks has written the music.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
Charles Randolph Wright has composed the lyrics.
Oh,
so it's, I don't want to give it all away. It's beautiful. People loved it. We had packed houses every night.
Really?
yes. Packed houses every night.
Well, don't give it away, because we're winding down. I wish we had much, much more time. We've only got like 2.5 minutes. So what else is coming up for you?
Oh, I'm going to do some more episodes of This Is Us.
Okay.
That I'm going to do. And then there are a couple of film projects and other television projects that I'm looking at to develop, to be in as well, to perform in, I'll put it that way.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And then there's my cat, Dolores Magnolia, my little companion.
I was supposed to ask you about your cat, because my friend Renza, she wanted to know the name of your cat. And so you just told us. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dolores
All
Magnolia.
Right. Wow. So, all right. So I just want to thank you so much because I know you have many options and things that you could do, but you allowed me to spend some time with you. And I want to thank you so very, very much. And you're always welcome here at What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander. In fact, after this is over, your podcast will sit on your page on harlemamerica.com. And if you have any projects coming up or any products or services that you want to the public to know about, we'll put them on your page. So when people go to listen to your podcast or any of the other podcasts, they'll be able to see what you're doing. And we want to thank you very much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful opportunity for me to be with Felicia Rashad again. And we invite you to tell your friends that the podcast is available in about another 30 minutes so they can listen to the show and catch up. Thank you so very, very much. Have a great day and a better one tomorrow. And don't judge your brother or sister too harshly until you walked a mile in his or her shoes. And as always, for all of you, and especially you, Felicia, I wish you excellent health, massive wealth, passionate love, and uncontrollable happiness for 2021 and beyond.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to What's Hot Harlem America with G. Keith Alexander. We'll be back next Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, that's 1 p.m. in New York, on the Voice America Variety Channel and the Harlem America Digital Network. Thank you for listening.